to another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, and with me I have my co-host, researcher, and friend, John McKinnon, author of The Persuasive Preacher, The Gifted Prophet, and The Noble Politician. John, it's good to be back and to talk about all things how to create a cult. We've been on a kick, I guess. People have caught on to this by now, but there are so many just obvious signs that a cult is being created. And the funny part is, if you are in one of these groups and you're watching all of this happen, you instantly start to feel this uncomfortable feeling, but you just go with it because it's spiritual, and people in churches, sadly, they turn off their critical thinking. But that's what happens. This is how a cult evolves. And the really sad part is, now that I understand how mental health works and psychology works, the cult leader themselves often don't really realize that that's what they're doing. But in the end, they do, and it becomes so destructive, and we're giving various ways that this happens. I should have picked up on it because I knew certain things were a little bit off when I was in the Branham religion. There was this theme. I don't know if you picked up on this or not, John, but there was this theme about how the divine healing was the bait on the hook. I heard ministers talk about it. Branham himself talked about it. And basically what he was saying is he was reeling people in out of other churches with this divine healing thing. And then they would come in and then he would give them the meat on the bones, the preachers would call it. And I never really stopped to think about that. He was stealing people from other churches. It's just so wrong, man. But that's how it worked. They built a cult by fishing for people out of other churches with this divine healing thing. Well, now take a step back. Now that we know what we know, and we have seen examples of all of the supernatural things that was this bait on the hook, many of which are proven to be complete fiction. We know it. We've proved it. You go through the revival history series that I did. It is an undeniable fact that there was a lot of deception used as the bait on the hook. And I've come to learn that in this aspect, I think Branham was actually being honest and correct. It was a bait on the hook strategy, but what he didn't just explicitly come out and say was, it was bait on the hook, the supernatural fictional things that was being invented, was the bait on the hook to reel people in, but more specifically, reel them in to control them. When you take all of the things that you and I have discussed, and realize that there was a political agenda behind most of it. There was also this white supremacy thing, the anti-Semitic thing, all of these different themes that were used that weren't really Christian, but it was meant and designed to control the masses. I've come to understand that he was being honest. He was being, in this one area, he was being honest, that he was reeling people in with his bait on the hook. He was just dishonest in the fact that the bait was pure fiction, and when he reeled people in, it was so that they could be controlled. And it's just so wrong when I think about it. So with that, I'll let you introduce the episode, but keep in mind, in the back of your mind, that the cult leader doesn't often know that what's happening is he's creating a group to be destructive, but they do recognize to some extent that what they're doing is a little bit unethical. You have to know it. You're telling people things that are not true, doing something that is dishonest, you have to know it's unethical, but it was for a purpose. And so I want to, in this and future episodes, go deeper with that purpose, but I'll let you introduce today. We're talking about the bait on the hook.
this is an episode about how to start your cult and using fake supernatural experiences and making up the supernatural to make yourself look like you're a special person. So we're going to explore this. And in most pseudo-Christian cults, there has to be one element in place just to make the whole system seem like it's really from God. And that is the supernatural. You know, because God is supernatural, you know, some Christians will look to the supernatural manifestation as evidence, you know, of God's presence. You know, cult leaders who want to provide the ultimate hook, you know, for the fish they want to catch, you know, they use the supernatural as bait. And in the last century, the supernatural manifestations, and I'd like to say including all groups, probably 99%, you know, was really not supernatural at all. But it's imaginations running wild. You know, even William Branham's ministry, he said the gift of healing was not, you know, the hook. It was only the bait on the hook to attract the people. So we know that they use supernatural experiences as an attraction. They know it is an attraction to people. And that's why all through the ministries that we've been looking at here, they have to have some elements of the supernatural, or how else would God be with them? You know, religious meetings in general, you know, when you come to a religious meeting under high expectations, you can get under a hypnotic spell, you know, where people can believe anything, especially what this practitioner on the stage is saying. And secular hypnosis shows prove that out. There's a certain group in the audience that's very suggestible, and they will believe almost anything and do almost anything and confirm that you're the supernatural person up there, or demonstrating supernatural things by their agreeance with what you're doing. You know, to get under a hypnotic spell from a hypnotist, you have to agree in your person that you're going to allow for that. A person that doesn't want to be hypnotized cannot be hypnotized. But if you're very suggestible, and hypnotists can pick up on who is suggestible and who's not by just talking to them, then they can get you to believe anything and act any way they want to. So just by suggesting that you act like a chicken, you're going to act like a chicken. Now, if a practitioner on stage conducting a healing service had you under the hypnotic spell, then they can suggest that you're healed, and you're going to go out believing that just as sure as the world, whether or not you're in fact healed. You know, and that's a good thing in some ways. When we get prayed for, we ought to believe that God will do for us everything that He is willing to do. But we can't command healing on anyone. But I do believe God will heal people through prayers. There's no doubt about that. So I'm not denying that at all. I'm just saying most of what we've seen on stage, you know, in the last century, a lot of it has been showmanship. You know, people can be led to believe things that are really not there. And I think of those who claimed, say, to see vibrations and color changes in the hands and blood and oil in the hands, which was gotten there by some means, probably mechanical means versus supernatural, or angel feathers falling from the sky and gold dust from heaven, which always came out of the air handling vents in the ceiling, with people up there with boxes throwing them through the vents. You know, that's really how that happened. Even having gems from heaven found on the seats, which were just plastic tokens from a kid's toy jewelry set, you know, and they were claiming they were gems from heaven. You know, these things were thoroughly debunked, you know, over and over again. But people really believe those things, believe it or not. I mean, even after they've been debunked, people will believe they actually saw gold dust from heaven. You know, nothing more. The Bible, there's also another case where a Bible became miraculously soaked in oil. And that was proven to be a hoax as well. Also revealing details about a person's life, you know, as if you had the word of knowledge or the gift of discernment through an earpiece that your wife was talking into. That's even been shown. Even using that same method by greeting people before the service and gathering details about their lives, and then pretending to discern them during the church service. Or putting people in wheelchairs, you know, prior to the service, and then performing a miracle on them where they walk out of the wheelchair. There's even some, now this was more bizarre, they would use chicken parts like gizzards and livers, and they would pretend that they were cancers that came out of people, and then they put them in alcohol to show that they were how they were removed. You know, most of the healings that we've seen demonstrated are mostly psychosomatic. You know, you can't prove them. Only people feel better because of the adrenaline that's running through their body at the time, because of their high expectations. And probably many more gimmicks have been used, you know, but these ones I just mentioned were actually used. And they have actually been used by people claiming to be, you know, having the gift of divine healing. I would think that we've seen about everything imaginable to trick audiences into thinking they're witnessing something supernatural through the minister or ministry that vindicates them to be of God. So today is going to be very interesting as we discuss the trickery, you know, which the Bible calls cunning, craftiness, and sleight of men. I'd say many, if not all, these men were good at sleight of hand. Paul says, the reason why I'm doing this is so we be no more children tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the sleight of men and cunning craftiness, whereby they lie in wait to deceive. You know, cunning means to be clever and skillful at devising schemes. You know, these men have been very skillful at all the different schemes they've devised. Craftiness is very artful, sly, fraudulent, and deceitful. And combined, when they combine these two terms together, it refers to the sophisticated, deceptive human schemes and smooth talk and persuasion used to trick people into false beliefs. So we're going to explore that today, John, very thoroughly.
And the really odd part about that is, you would think that when people come to realize that they've been tricked, especially by a Christian minister or evangelist or apostle, prophet, etc., you would think that they would just run screaming, get out of this church, man, because if this person has tricked me and I believe something that wasn't true that tied them to the supernatural, what can I believe that they say? You know, if they're going to lie about one thing, will they not lie about something else? But the sad truth is, because of the way that this movement was designed, it was the bait on the hook. You reel them in. Once you get them in, you get them to suppress their critical thinking. And when you get people not to think about what you're saying, when they come to terms with the fact that, oh my gosh, I was just lied to, they instead think, well, I'm going to stick around and see what he says that's true, because there's probably a reason why they did that. It's just so wrong when you think about it. And the trickery is unbelievable. It got to it grew to an exponential scale. I went back through the history and I studied John Dowie, which I've talked about him a few times. This guy was the kingpin of the trickery, and he was going through from town to town with satchels, and he would tell people, I healed all these other people in this town and you can't talk to any of them, but here's their testimony. And he held it up and read it, and he would hold these lectures where he's reading through testimonies of people in some other place that's gotten healed. And the newspapers ate it up at first. They said, oh, this guy's man of God, and people came to see him basically because the journalists weren't critically thinking when they wrote the first few articles. But after a while, they caught on to his scheme and they started saying, hey, we're going to go try to find some of these people and see, do they really exist? And that's where all of his hell broke loose. It's kind of crazy when you think about it. But what he did was he set the stage for what would come. And there were so many copycats that existed, and it was like a snowball rolling down a hill, getting bigger and bigger and bigger with fiction and greater miracles, greater signs, greater wonders, until the movement started to just adopt the idea that the signs and the wonders were the gospel, not the real gospel. And this just developed into something that it was out of control, to the extent Branham said this, and then many others copied Branham after this. He would say things like, I've had more miracles in my ministry than Jesus ever did on the face of the earth. Which is so heretical. It's not something that a Christian minister would ever say, but that's what he said, that's what was adopted in the movement. And yet at the same time, Branham and all of the others, whenever they said something that wasn't true, they had to know that they did. And so they know that they're using trickery. They're reeling people in with trickery. They're bringing them in, get them under the control. And in the end, what you have is you have a gospel that's based off of experiences and signs and wonders rather than what's written in the Bible. And people just kind of, over time, they just kind of forgotten what was in the Bible.
Those are very good points, John. And, you know, there have been more claims of the supernatural in the last couple hundred years than probably ever has been in the last 2,000 years of church history. So as I was doing some research into this episode, something really stood out to me. It appears as we get closer to our times in this day, the supernatural was what I might say, you know, dumbed down. And what I mean by that is that in the past, people spent more time reading and studying, so the claims more intellectually based. And as we get into the 20th century, reading and studying is so diminished that it became what you could do in the moment, you know, visually demonstrating something like a sideshow in the circus or a carnival. People abandoned really using their minds as much and instead opted for the show and entertainment. It appears as we get closer to our times too in this day, you know, the supernatural was really stripped of its depth and then repackaged for the masses so they could grasp it. In the past, claims of divine power and miracles were rooted in vigorous studies, scriptural exegesis, prophetic timelines that demanded you know, for you to be really engaged mentally, you know, so that you didn't get tricked. You know, those who could read would often devote serious time to books and theology and philosophy and religious leaders and movements. They tended to anchor their authority in scriptural arguments. If you think back in the late 1800s, when it started with Charles Taze Russell, his appeal rested on dense Bible chronologies, complex pyramidology, calculations, voluminous writings that required you to sit down and study and wrestle with pages of interpretation, even though we know many of those things, he got off on the wrong trail. But you had to engage your mind. That was just back 150 years ago, you know, to accept his claims. So those leaders really studied and studied the scriptures so that they thought they could conjecture something that would be intellectually challenging. But nowadays, you know, people have a hard time engaging their minds to even do such study to verify was his claims even accurate, or verify anybody else's claims whether accurate. They like the show, the showmanships. Think back to, and even in the 1800s, you had Joseph Smith crafting entire new scriptures, translating golden plates and papyri. You know, they weren't quick thrills like we've seen today, where, you know, followers of those times had to pore over these dense volumes like studies in the scriptures or the Book of Mormon to even grasp everything that they were talking about. They had to really go back and took hours and days of reading and cross-referencing to really buy into his arguments. And they demanded a certain level of reading and contemplation, you know, from the converts. But here we are in the 20th century and now the 21st century, reading and studying, you know, back in those days really gave way to something far more visceral. And by no means by me saying all that was I endorsing any of those belief systems. But I'm just saying, here's how the change occurred. When you go back hundreds of years ago, you know, men really engaged their mind, men and women engaged their minds in study. And nowadays it's given away to something very visceral and a spectacle. You know, mass media began to explode in the early 20th century. You had radio, television, which gave way to large tent revivals, you know, the circus. Eventually now we have the internet. You know, attention spans began to shorten. You know, literary habits shifted towards the quick consumption of, you know, now at even YouTube videos longer than 5 minutes, you can't hold people's attention. You know, the broader culture became far more visually oriented. And the supernatural claims that really captured public imagination began to pivot away from study from then toward the stage. Well, they wanted to see something, and they wanted to be entertained. So it's strange how the literacy rates of all people have really climbed. We can measure that, you know, the literacy rates of all people. But then the attention spans really crashed when the radio and TV and movies came out. People are saying nowadays, why wrestle with the theology when you could see a miracle right now? And that became the backbone of the Pentecostal charismatic explosion of the healing revivals. You know, you had A.A. Allen with massive tents, you know, growing legs on the stage through mostly shoe tricks. William Branham discerned ailments, which he may have gotten some of the intel from prayer cards, maybe not all of those. All hyped as angelic discernment, you know, all of it. People followed miracles just as they did in Jesus' day. You know, it's no different. And Jesus said, you don't seek me to discover who I am in prophecy. You don't go back and study the scriptures or search the scriptures as Jesus admonished them to do. He said, you're following me because I created some bread and fish for your belly. You know, Jesus tells people they're seeking him because he miraculously fed them. Not because they understood the deeper meaning or saw the true signs of his words, which pointed to eternal life and belief in him and not just a physical satisfaction or a spectacle. You know, nowadays there's no need for a Bible concordance for most people. They just want to watch the cripples toss their crutches aside. And John Alexander Dowie was a prototype of all this. He built Zion City on his mass healings and also at the 1893 World's Fair. You know, John G. Lake, who came out of that, piled up discarded braces as trophies. All these were unverified, of course. Jim Jones took the chicken livers, as we talked about, and pretended to expel tumors to wow crowds of thousands of people. So by the mid-century of last century, it was just pure sideshow. you know, the gold dust from fog machines at Bethel-style events to electric shocker anointings and African crusades. Peter Popoff's radio-fed words of knowledge from his wife. And that was exposed by James Randi, by the way. That shifted in those times from Bible study and prophecy for yourself to just come and witness now God's miraculous power on stage as we perform. Now, people abandoned their minds altogether, critical thinking, and opted for the show because that's instant validation to them. No homework required, you know, getting more with little effort. People want something for nothing, you know, in this day. People found their emotional highs, you know, from this mass hypnosis of worship services. And many techniques like using the repetitive music and allowing themselves to be slain in the spirit because of being so suggestible. All the minister had to do was wave his hand across the audience and half of them would fall down. And they're becoming vulnerable to almost anything new, including the corruption that actually follows these groups. You know, people can soak up all the glory and just avoid the brain strain that comes with study. They give their minds over to the system and they just go to sleep. You know, it's even worse now, John, when we have all these sound bites, visual effects, and things that can be done, you know, that weren't done last century. It's going to be an interesting time, John, as we move along. And we're just encouraging people to go back and study, you know, study to show yourself approved, as the scriptures say. You know, don't just rely on what we say or anybody else says or what you think is happening on stage. You really better study in this age because it's very deceptive.
It is deceptive. And, you know, whenever I left the Branham movement, I did not really leave the overall revival movement, the thing that Branham was a part of, the thing that all of these ministers were laying the bedrock for what would develop into the New Apostolic Reformation today. I simply left my grandfather's church and those like it, not knowing to the extent that I would be finding that all of it was just so off the mark. I left believing that Branham was a prophet, believe it or not. In fact, I had planned to have a few conversations with my grandfather and just discuss a few of the prophecies that I knew had failed, and I still thought he was a prophet, but I did not yet even understand that a prophet cannot have one single prophecy that has any detail wrong, or he's just making it up. The Bible clearly says this. I didn't know that. I didn't understand that. I was still part of that revival movement, and I was indoctrinated to believe in that way. So when I left simply because I could feel that something was off. I didn't know what it was. I could feel that it wasn't really matching. It matched what I read in the Bible when I read in the Bible in their way of reading, where I'm literally taking what Branham said about the Bible and running everything through that filter. But I was finding places where that filter just seemed a little bit off. I didn't know the full extent of it, but I was just going to take my family to somewhere where I felt like we could get closer to God. When I did this and things started to happen very quickly, I realized that something's really bad wrong because, number one, they don't want me asking questions, which is something that I was doing. Number two, they wanted to just sever us off so that people in the group could not have contact with us after leaving the group. And at the same time, I'm dealing with all of this. I'm also dealing with some severe mental health struggles. I had severe anxiety and depression, mostly from being in the group, but some of it hereditary. And I was nearly crippled with all of the things that were on top of me, compounded by the fact that most of my family and friends cut me off. I knew that that's wrong. That's not the way that a church should behave. And so something's wrong. What is it? Why is it wrong? I started reading the Bible over and over and over, and not reading it through the lens of what I was told it said, but instead, here's a book, let's read it start to finish. Here's a letter, let's read it start to finish. And what I found was there were miracles in the Bible. There were things that were intended to open people's eyes. And if you wanted to say that it was a fish lure on the hook to reel people in, maybe so. But when you're talking New Testament, it was to reel them in to Jesus, not to reel them in to an apostle or prophet. You don't find any example where Paul is saying, I'm going to put the bait out on the hook and reel you in so that you can know that I am God's prophet. It just doesn't exist. They were bringing people in so that they would know Jesus better. And I started to understand that in the Bible. And then the thought hit me this whole revival movement, it was all about these signs and these wonders and these gifts and these experiences. I began to ask the question, what does any of that matter? If I want to focus on the gospel and say that all the miracles were true, say they were, and I, at that point, I had not yet discovered that many of them were trickery. If they were true, did they point me to the gospel? And I came to find out, as I examined each one of them individually, most of them did not. There were a couple that it is somewhat questionable, but usually, depending on the speaker, the evangelist, the prophet, the apostle, whoever it is that was in this latter rain mess, usually, whenever something great happened, they used it as a means to draw people to them so that their revival crowd would get bigger. And they even had these battles over who had the biggest tent. Who can draw the biggest crowds? That was the battle. And I got to thinking about how wrong that was. The revival culture focused on the humans, the revivalists, and it elevated them up. It lifted them up. And the problem is that there were people who did not have the mental capacity to handle this. So once they got put up onto this pedestal, you couldn't get them back off, and they had to stay there, and they fought tooth and nail to stay there. Let's get a bigger miracle. Let's get a bigger experience. Let's pretend that I went to hell and back and see what the people say about this. There are so many tricks that they used to keep themselves on the platform that it turned into a spectacle. And I realized very quickly the gospel was not meant to be a spectacle. So what I was finding in the movement did not match what I was finding in the Bible. And for me, that was really the bottom line. I didn't care if the experiences were true. I didn't care if the miracles were true. Say that they healed 10,000 people and they got off their crutches and their wheelchairs. That didn't matter to me. I wasn't one of those people in the wheelchairs. Now, if you were, maybe that mattered to you. But did it bring you to the gospel, or did it bring you to the human? The problem for me is, I think in almost every case, that whenever somebody went through an experience like this, and whenever they felt like they were healed, or when they positively confessed, knowing that they weren't healed, but trying to convince themselves to believe that they were healed, in every case that I've examined, except for just a handful, they were looking to become closer to the revivalist. Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the latter rain, charismatic, and other fringe movements into the new apostolic reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support.
At the turn of the last century, the supernatural was no longer intellectually received in books and predictions and stories that members had to go and study, but then it became demonstrations of power. Sideshows were becoming, very popular in the early 20s. Drew crowds who like to be entertained. And I think back in the 1930 revival series that Roy Davis and William Branham had in Jeffersonville, where Roy Davis eventually took over someone else's church. He claimed to be a converted spiritualist and wanted to show how he could demonstrate those supernatural things on stage. And he did before the audiences. It was all over the papers at that time. And I can say for a fact, if you go and research the newspapers, you will find it. Not as though, as William Branham claimed, that the halo of light over his head at the river was all in the newspapers. And we cannot find any evidence of that. I will say that their declaration of Spook Night and the supernatural 1930 can be found all over the papers. But so behind the scenes of all these groups, they were collecting money. They were taking down the estates of widows and taking it for themselves, getting rich off of people's vulnerabilities of the time. And one of the most popular ones that did that was John Alexander Dowie. And you've talked extensively about him, and so I won't go into a lot of that. But John Dowie was really the start of all this in the early 20th century of these big demonstrations of supernatural, big claims, claiming to be Elijah. All that started with him. So John Dowie, he actually staged dramatic healings, featured people rising from wheelchairs, discarding crutches, being cured of blindness and deafness. And he did this near the Chicago World's Fair in 1893. Critics, you know, including doctors and mainline ministers, called those dramatic healings staged, obviously, and using audience plants, accomplices to pretend to be afflicted, careful screening to ensure that they had successes, you know, in the meetings. But a lot of these healings were psychosomatic, temporary cures, you know, because many illnesses that he supposedly healed, such as asthma, arthritis, or chronic pain, they were deemed psychosomatic because it provided them temporary relief, but not long-term success. So even in Zion City, where they banned doctors and medicines, and they relied solely on prayer, there was a high reported instances of failure and some deaths, you know, reported because of untreated conditions. And we've heard of this, exaggerated mass healings, unverified testimonials, that's all over the place. And that, of course, migrated into the mid-20th century with the healing revival. Of course, theatrical signs like oil and blood found in the people's hands and so forth, that was also another manifestation of something supposedly supernatural, and also banning medicine altogether. You know, many people under these healers' ministries, even William Branham's, they would go home and abandon medical treatment, such as the case with Carol Strubler, which she was a very famous one on the Deep Call to the Deep video. Her mother had such great faith that they discontinued treatment and expecting the healing, and which she unfortunately died, you know, a few weeks later. So this was all going around. It's all very prevalent in these ministries, John.
I've mentioned this before, but whenever I left Branhamism, there were a few people who pleaded with me and begged with me, John, don't do this, because of, and not because of the gospel or because of Jesus, but because of the healings, because of the supernatural. They never went to Jesus. They never said, in fact, I was very open about it. I'm leaving Branhamism. I'm remaining a Christian. You can feel comforted that I'm still a Christian, but I just can't have my family going to this church anymore. That's how I told everybody whenever I left. But they didn't really fight for that. They didn't care that I was leaving a Christian. What they cared was, I must remain a Branhamite. That's really what it boiled down to. And they went specifically to the healing. In fact, I had one family member who looked at me and said, John, why are you doing this? What about Donnie Morton? And for those of you who don't know, you can go to my website. You can type in Donnie Morton. This was one of William Branham's more famous alleged healings. And he claims that he healed the boy, thus saith the Lord. The boy came all the way down from Saskatchewan with his father. And what we did not know was that the boy died of the very disease that Branham claimed to have cured him from. And Reader's Digest published it and unfortunately called it the miracle of Donnie Morton. And the miracle was not that the boy was healed. The miracle was that the boy was comforted in his time of death. That's really what it comes down to. You can go read the Reader's Digest articles even. That's what it came down to. But Branham lied, and he said that he had healed the boy. And you can determine just how big the lie gets, because initially he says that he prayed for the boy and he was healed. He did not know that Donnie Morton had died. Later, somebody came back and informed him, apparently, that Donnie Morton had died. And the story changes, and it changes over time such that, well, the boy, he was healed of the thing that I said, but then he died of something else. In other words, this child and his father came all the way down from Saskatchewan to be healed of disease A, and then almost at the same time, while suffering through the same elements, was healed of that, but he died of this other thing while in the hospital. What does that help the boy in the first place? You know, if you come down to be healed, would you not believe that you're healed? You know, what if the boy even had, I think it was pneumonia or something that Branham claimed he died of. If he had this and God healed him, would God not heal him to live? And that was really, for me, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that he did this. It showed me that he knew that this was a lie. This is one case where I can, without a question, I can say that he knew it was a lie, but he covered up the lie by simply saying, well, he died of this other thing. I healed him of the main thing. And then you go through the newspaper reports. They're very open with the boy after the autopsy, after they find out why he died. He died of the very disease that Branham claimed to have cured him from. This, for me, was a problem. But it just goes to show, in the broader movement, you had all of these people who were fighting for a miracle. I need a miracle. It needs to be bigger than the next guy. It's a competition. You have all of these evangelists that are competing for a bigger crowd, because the more crowd, the more money coming in from the offering plates. That's what they were looking for. Now, you can talk to people who are Branhamites and they'll say Branham was this humble guy. He didn't have very much money. He didn't have two pennies to scrape together. But look at some of the things he said. He mentions a Longines watch, for example. This, if you look at these watches today, it's a $10,000 watch. And he says that he needs it because when his hand vibrates to detect a disease, it breaks the normal watch. So I've got to have a $10,000 watch. That's the kind of things that's happening. But over time, it shifts and, you know, the money, it doesn't become as obvious over time. And it's not until his daughter in one of her letters mentions that he died with like $3 million or something like this, which is a lot of money back then. These people were competing for money. That's really what it boils down for me. And I can't just sit still whenever people are out to make a buck off of the backs of people who are suffering. That's really what it came down to. These guys were doing this. They were, many of them knew that they were lying, like the example that I gave of Branham. They knew that they lied, but they also knew that if they told the lie big enough, people would believe it, and if they believed it, they would put money in the offering plate.
You know, I'll turn to an acquaintance, you know, William Branham in our time, to show these things going on in his ministry, and in the ministry of William Branham, with even more supernatural claims. And he may have gotten his techniques from, say, William Branham. And this was Jim Jones, in fact. So let me read to you a quote from William Branham in 1947, saying, "There's where a minister standing on the platform, a big cancer hanging on him, probably that big, hanging on his neck. The doctor said no chance for him, standing there with reporters, standing there with flashing pictures. The cancer turned white, fell off his neck, rolled over on my feet. I got it in alcohol now." And let me read one more here. "Deep calleth to the deep." This was actually in, I think, the service that was actually recorded and by video. "He said a lady came to me last night, very saintly, godly woman, a big cancer. She had come in the line. It was all covered over with her hair. I stood there and told her under the spirit she had cancer in the head. I said it was going to come off, and it come off, and she's got it here, I guess, tonight, here in a bottle of alcohol right here. We've had thousands of them, thousands. Is the woman in the building, would you stand up? If it's anybody in the building with the cancer in the alcohol, if she's anywhere in the building, standing up, wave your hand. Yes, there's the lady standing there with the cancer, and I seen them stand right there on the platform, turn white and drop off on the platform, see?" So, if you listen closely to what Jim Jones did in his ministry, it's very close to that. You know, they love to put cancers, so-called, in bottles of alcohol. But what Jim Jones used was a different technique. I don't know if he learned these from Branham's ministry or not. But Jim Jones actually, it was clear that he faked his tumors and healings. He removed cancers by having the plants in the audience cough up or expel bloody tissue and then presented them as tumors to the audience. But the trick behind that was he was using chicken livers and gizzards and giblets or rotting animal organs. And they palmed them in their hands. And then when they put their hands up, they, of course, fall out. You know, magicians can do these kinds of tricks. But this was exactly what Jim Jones, of course, was doing. Witnesses and defectors really confirmed this. The ones that left the ministry confirmed it. One elderly woman actually realized it was a chicken liver during her healing. These were well documented. There was also staged wheelchair and disability healings as well. Crippled people were often healthy, but they were temple members in disguise, like secretaries dressed as old women. They rose from wheelchairs and walked and danced after the prayer. Some individuals repeated the act across different services. No long-term cures verified. So we see this same thing happening in the ministry of William Branham when the reporters reported, you know, the girl came in the line a second time in the prayer line and was healed again, and that was the only miracle that they could discern in that healing that he had, or that healing revival there at the time. So we see the same individuals can actually appear in multiple prayer lines. Also, fake resurrections from the dead. Jones claimed to raise the dead, and he boasted of about 43 resurrections from the dead. Sometimes it's staged with accomplices pretending to be dead. Sometimes they were drugged for realism, or many of them were unverified. So anyway, these things also happened in William Branham's ministry, because early on in 1947, he claimed a resurrection from the dead in a morgue. And, of course, it had to be investigated. Then the reporters wanted to know. They went to Jeffersonville Morgue and asked, did William Branham actually come here and raise somebody from the dead? Of course, the story was very unverified, but him being hundreds of miles away in another country in Canada at the time, he could claim all kinds of things, and no one could. He wouldn't think nobody would go try to verify these things that he would claim. Same thing with Jim Jones. He would claim miraculous things that they could never verify.
And I'll mention this, it is impossible to prove a negative. So these guys, they want things that really cannot be verified, because that's the best way. If you're going to trick somebody, if you're going to scam somebody, you want something that they cannot verify one way or the other. And the things that they boast of the most are the things that can't be proven, because it's impossible to prove that something didn't happen. It's very difficult, I should say. I've had to go back and you almost have to piece things together and make it very plausible that it didn't happen. And even then, they'll argue it tooth and nail because, well, you can't prove it, John. And for me, what does it really matter? I still look at all of this and I think none of that matters. Even if it was true, even if this guy was on the platform and he healed the masses, tens of thousands of people, but he was pointing to himself instead of the gospel, I would say that I don't care. I really don't care that they got healed.
So let's turn to some of the supernatural things that was in William Branham's ministry. But he was careful as he could be when he spoke about supernatural things, I think, in his ministry. He was not as careless. And I would say he felt that as long as no one could externally examine or verify his claims, he could then spin them in the way he wanted to. But back then, no one had the internet, didn't have newspaper archives. They could go quickly verify things. People lived in the here and now at that time. So he could make claims about his life story, which he knew no one could really verify except himself. And except those who in his inner circle might know some of the things that he said could have been off, but it was only those in the very inner circle that knew him very well. But he had a talent for making his simple, unassuming stories that were very simple on the surface, but he could grow them into massive supernatural proportions in the eyes of the people. One of those things was the birth halo. And even early visions, you know, he claimed that a halo of light came in the window and hung over him, or that he received visions when he was a year and a half old. He was able to tell his mother about him. You know, there's no real external evidence for this other than him telling it. Now, I would say if his stories over and over again were found to be trustworthy throughout his life, we might could lend some credence to that. But over and over again, we find that we cannot verify most of his stories that he told, so we don't feel like we can verify this one as well. An 18-month-old child, you know, speaking to his mother about a vision, when most children do not really speak very coherently at that age, you know, that's also hard to believe that it could have been true. So, but in his memory, of course, he made it to be true. Other instances was the light appearing over the Ohio River, but there's never been any eyewitnesses of that event as well. And never anything in the newspaper about it. When he said it was all over the newspapers. And also the number of people that were there on the river was greatly exaggerated. And then there was the Houston photograph of 1950, supposed to be a halo of light over his head, when we know, in fact, that very similar ceiling lights were taken, you know, which we thoroughly have gone over in past episodes. Even others in Sabino Canyon in the years 1963 to 65, they were shown and proven not to be supernatural, even by Perry Green, who thoroughly debunked that, you know, showing the brothers at the time that it was a defective camera that was actually pasting the orangey amber light in the photographs. And so it couldn't have been the angel of the Lord, because he said he had a supernatural camera himself. He could produce the same things. There was many healings, failed healings, in fact, very exaggerated claims. He claimed nearly 100% healing rates in a lot of his meetings. But follow-up, which I've just recently presented in South Africa meetings, they were cures found to be largely exaggerated. And even cures where they posted them in the newspapers as healings, and when in fact the person actually died. So they weren't very, not to say they weren't honest about their claims, but they never really tried to find out if the things were real that they were publishing. And there's another one that's very dramatic, too, that gave a big boost to William Branham's ministry in 1951, which was the healing of Congressman Upshaw. Now, Upshaw was not in a wheelchair at the time, and he was not wheelchair-bound at the time. He was only on crutches. But many of the quotes that were talked about that when William Branham talked about it is that he was in a wheelchair and that he rose from the wheelchair. So I believe firmly that was a staged healing. If Upshaw was put in a wheelchair and he rose up as if he were healed, you know, that wasn't truth then, because he was not in a wheelchair for the last 66 years as was claimed. And the truth is, Upshaw admitted he could actually walk some prior to that service. We know back in the 1920s, many years after his accident, he was practically running up and down the aisles, lightly touching his crutches to the ground, as was reported back then, even in the newspapers. And Upshaw would get mad at you if you tried to claim that he did not need his crutches so much. It was more like a prop to him. So even William Branham claiming to never have heard of Upshaw was very strange, when Upshaw and Roy Davis, his own pastor, worked together so closely. And so closely in 1944, even, when he was trying to build an orphanage, Upshaw being the treasurer, Roy Davis being the head of the orphanage, that never materialized and turned out to be fraudulent collection of money. And then we get to the cloud, you know, that was claimed to be so mysterious and supernatural, has been thoroughly proven to be, you know, not supernatural at all. And then we've done this so many times, you know, William Branham not being there. So trying to claim it was some supernatural visitation of angels, when in fact it was created by a rocket explosion that was blown up intentionally, and then claiming it to be fulfillment of Scripture in the book of Revelation, and being revealed to the bride, you know, that Christ was actually came down and looking upon the earth. You know, that's how it was described, but thoroughly shown that this was no supernatural cloud, because it was 200 miles away from where William Branham would have been in the first place. So it wasn't even over where he was would have been standing had he had been there. And he was also not even there at the time. And then something we went over a little while back was creating squirrels out of thin air. We went over that very thoroughly last time as well. These things were claims of supernatural claims, but really none of them can ever really be verified. You're only taking the word of a man in all these. And in fact, the ones that were, you can take his word and go back and try to prove it out, and you'll find it to be very inaccurate in all cases. But the things where he was alone and claimed, you know, I would say that, you know, we could probably believe some of that. If his claims over and over again could be found to be credible, but we find there was so many times he would be exaggerating or not telling us the truth or even making up things that, you know, when you can't verify somebody's words, then you certainly have reason to suspect things that happen privately to him that he comes to speak about trying to make them supernatural. We have a right to question and be critical about those claims as well.
We do, but it's odd, because whenever you do it, you are instantly branded public enemy number one. The funny part of it is, William Branham would often say this: if you can find one single detail wrong with any one single prophecy, you can put a sign on my back that says false prophet. He said this more than one time on the recordings. Well, the moment that you do it, the moment that you find it, well, it's not just one thing, man. Every single prophecy has huge problems, huge problems. Whenever you do it, they fight tooth and nail. One of the best examples, he claimed that 16 men fell from this bridge here in Jeffersonville, the bridge spanning Jeffersonville to Louisville, Kentucky. And he gives all of these details in this alleged vision, none of which are right. The bridge itself, he says there's an accident, 16 men fell. This did happen on a bridge long before he was born, but he talks about this new bridge that was built after he was born, not long after, and he says, I saw a sign, and he gives the number of years, and the sign had the number of years. Well, that number of the years to the day, these 16 men fell to their deaths. So the problem is, it didn't happen, especially within the time span that he said. The bridge was built long before that time span existed. You can go look up the bridge prophecy details on my website. None of the details are true. So according to his own words, you would brand him a false prophet. But the moment that we did this, the cult headquarters even put out videos how, well, there's this gray, questionable area. Let's go with this unknown thing, and let's call in somebody who's not even a, I don't know if the guy's even a Christian, but they brought in one of their, apparently one of their attorneys or something like this, and had him talk because he was a mayor's son, and said, well, I think there might be bodies that are buried in the caissons holding the bridge, which was another detail that was wrong. It didn't match what he said. So it's in the end, it becomes grasping for straws to prove something that, in my opinion, as I've said all throughout this episode, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if he got the prophecy right. If he's pointing people away from Jesus to himself, how can you say that this is even a Christian prophecy or a Christian prophet? That's not what Christian prophets do. You don't find, he claims that he was another John the Baptist. That's one of the claims that he made. Well, you don't find John the Baptist saying, hey, come hear me, come hear me. Jesus is off to the side. We like him, but I have greater miracles in my ministry than Jesus did. I feel sacrilegious saying this, even though I'm joking. But that's what he did for real. That's what Branham did and others did for real. It is so wrong.
Well, John, just to wrap up, you know, we can spend days and days talking about all these things, the supernatural claims of various ministries. But we know, in fact, we've thoroughly gone through a lot of things in depth. And these things we briefly mentioned today, people need to go and research them for themselves, you know, to see if these things be true or not. And then see what conclusions they come up with. Don't just accept them blindly, is what our recommendation would be. But supernatural claims being put out in the public today, they're trying to build the ministry's credibility. But they make tremendous loads of cash off the people. They really keep the people in bondage to these things. And it's really tragic, because when the person ever wakes up years later and realizes they've been using the best years of their lives in service to something that had no substance, it's really tragic. You know, some may never wake up from the delusion they're in, but we are doing our best to help those come out of something, to find something that's real, to find healthy churches to belong to. And that's a search each one has to take individually. No one can dictate, you know, that to you. You have to be sure of your own. But be sure you know what you're doing in those things. But no healthy church out there that you might attend would keep your salvation tied to belonging to them, you know, as long as you confess the truth of the gospel and believe and practice what the Bible says. You know, these side things that we may believe about, you know, the coming of the Lord, second return of Christ and all that, all those things are wonderful to study. But any group that's going to tie your salvation to believing in one man's ideas or a prophet of the age or how I teach Book of Revelation or any other thing, you know, if they tie you down to that, other than the basic truths of salvation, believing in Jesus and believing the gospel, then that's where it should be a concern to you. It's those groups that want to separate you from the mainstream and bring you into an inner circle and then claim special revelation, supernatural workings that, like we've been talking about, and holy men. That's what's destructive to your true spiritual growth. I think you need to find a good God-called man that teaches the Bible, you know, and stick with them, you know, and always beware of things as they teach the Bible, and always be ready to challenge if something doesn't sound right. But in these cases, I'm sure if you examine all the others doing this, there's techniques that work because the congregation wants them to work. You know, the miracles happen because people want them to happen and want them to be true, you know, really more than they want the truth. Like I said, the times of the study of the scriptures, the times of contemplating these things, the times of being critically thinking, you know, it's almost gone. And hopefully we're seeing a return to it as we have more information out there today. People won't hide from the information, but they'll actually confront it and be truthful with themselves and what the information is actually telling them. You know, healings occur because people know that to say otherwise would be to doubt the person's word and to doubt the belief system altogether. The signs prove that it's from God because they need signs to vindicate, you know, or else it'll override their mental faculties. Without these signs and wonders, you know, it doesn't, you know, provide truth to the movement. So, you know, John, based on what we've talked about today with the supernatural and how a lot of those things can be faked, a lot of those things can be replicated through magical tricks and illusions and hypnotic trance that we see that services can put people under. You know, I certainly wouldn't be relying on signs and wonders at all. I certainly wouldn't be relying on the fact that if William Branham had a gift of discernment, I would not rely on that. That's not what you can base your eternal life on. That's not what you can base your belonging to a certain group on. Nowhere in Scripture, you know, are we told to rely on those things. And in fact, we're told to have our skeptical hats on when we see those things. We're told to have discerning minds when these things appear before us. And then we're told to actually poke holes in the fabric of those things so that we can be scriptural. You know, John says to test the spirits, try the spirits to see if they're of God. So that's what we need to do. And that takes study. That takes effort. And like I said, a lot of people are not willing, you know, to put forth the mental effort in this day to really decide for themselves. Matthew 24:24. There will arise false Christ. There will arise false prophets, and they shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch if it were possible, they could deceive the very elect of God. So we see Jesus saying they're going to come, they're going to show you signs and wonders, and even if they could duplicate those without faking them, that could be deceptive. Jesus said it. In 2 Thessalonians 2:9, it says that when that wicked shall be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy him with the brightness of his coming, even him whose coming's after the working of Satan with all power and signs and lying wonders. So, John, we see that it's spoken about in the Bible very clearly. There's going to be signs and power and lying wonders to us. So we really need to be on guard. And I hope the people that hear these things will get their guard up and start studying, start researching for themselves. Start not listening to us because of what we're saying. Study it out on yourself and see what conclusions you come out with, because there's a lot at stake here. So I want to remember what Jesus said in Matthew 16. He says, "You know how to discern the appearance of the sky, but you are unable to discern the signs of the times." He says, "An evil and adulterous generation wants a sign, and so a sign will not be given to it except the sign of Jonah." And he left them and went away. You know, we don't want to look for signs. We don't want to be like what Jesus said about that generation in his time, that they were looking for signs. We want to be scriptural. You know, Scripture is the only sign I need to go back to. I don't need somebody demonstrating signs and wonders in front of me and claiming to be somebody.
And that right there is the nail on the head. I mean, that is it. That is what these men and women were doing. They wanted to be somebody. And it's not wrong to want to be somebody, but whenever you have to deceive people to become somebody, you're becoming somebody that you're not. And that, for me, was the bottom line. Branham claimed that he was the messenger from God, the last messenger for the age, all of these different things. But if you have to give deception to prove that point can't be right. If I was a mechanic and I was telling people that I can do all of these things to your car, I can change the alternator, I can change the belts, I can do all of these things, and then you come test me and I don't even know how to put a belt on, you're going to say, "I don't know if you're a mechanic, man." And more to the point, I don't know if I want to trust you with my car. That's what it comes down to. And for me, that's why I left, because I came to the point where I didn't want to trust
this religion, this so-called prophet, these so-called preachers, I did not want to trust them with my children. And so my family decided, we made a conscious effort. It was the harder way. We knew we were taking the harder path. We decided we were going to leave all of this behind so that my children could grow up in a healthy way. And that's why I do what I do. That's why I did what I did. And that's why I think people should just kind of wake up and realize that something's wrong here. If you have to deceive people to prove that you are something, you're proving that you're not the something that you're claiming. So if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about Roy Davis and William Branham, you can read The Persuasive Preacher, The Gifted Prophet, and The Noble Politician. And for more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.